Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real Feel Good Radio.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla. Welcome, everyone.
Woohoo! So we continue from last week, which was part one, with Luke Norland talking about the evolution of the repertory. And we welcome Luke back for part two. Welcome, Luke Norland.
Thank you, T. Thank you, Nyla.
We would actually just say, just before you do this, it is only timely and apt that we, both of us, and the listeners of the Homeopathy Health Show, and in fact, all the homeopaths from around the world who listen to the Homeopathy Health Show, most certainly, to show you the utmost respect and to say thank you for everything that you do, because it's just sometimes mesmerizing, and what you are doing for this service to humanity, for homeopathy, really truly does make a difference, because we use the technology or the information that you impart. And it's really, really wonderful. It's a nice place to be. So thank you, Luke Norland, from all of us, for everything that you do, especially from Nyla and myself.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's a pleasure. And, you know, I'm very glad to be where I am, working, you know, working with technology and like bringing these, integrating the past and the present together, and you know, honoring both, and working with patients directly, so it keeps me grounded. Even though I have a great interest in creating tools and technology, and you know, and software approaches, ultimately they're all in service to my goal, is to make homeopathy more reproducible, easier, but not watered down in any way. Because people get a lot of burnout, homeopaths. You know, it's a profession where you can get quite isolated. You're dealing with complicated, a lot of different problems. People of all ages, of all different problems, may come to you, and people with great need come to you. And you can often feel, you know, alone with that, and spend a lot of time with your patients, and actually, but you know, we sometimes spend too long, and I think our tools can be better, to help us, like Atik said in the first session, like bring our intuition, bring our gut feeling into our decision making, and have the tooling support that. Not the tool should not force you to be incredibly analytical, because ultimately you know, your mind can go round in loops, considering, you know, doing a differential, this one against that one, drilling down into very fine details, and you could still very easily miss the golden thread by doing that. And to capture the golden thread, you need to sit back and relax and be a pattern matcher, not not a drilling down into all of the details.
So beautifully said, Luke. I can say it by example. I remember during my study days, we got homework cases. And just by going through the case, I would in my mind, think about a remedy or a remedy family. And I would say, oh, this is matching the core of this family or this remedy. And then came the homework and analysis part. And that took me to somewhere else. Like I would do a beautiful analysis and get to a completely different territory. And that's where the homeopath comes in. When you are going perceiving a case, stay with what you are perceiving it. Don't rely too much on the analysis. Sometimes that's all what is needed, what you have perceived and what is coming through.
Now, the question is, some of the students listening, certainly, and there are thousands that listen from around the world, will question, yeah, but I don't know if I know anything. But that's where, for those, certainly for the students that are listening, is where you need to trust yourself. Of course, we are talking that you need to use the repertory and the materia medica. We obviously have to be switched on. We're not saying just close your eyes and just hope something happens. But these things happen organically. You have to trust yourself, because if you don't, then, you know, there's a level of negative energy, and homeopathy is energetic medicine. Okay. So just remember that it's very, very important. Be yourself, trust in yourself, and, you know, it will open up. That path will open up, and you'll repertorize, or you'll find the remedy. It will come to you, however, by hook or by crook. But just trust yourself. Okay. Believe in yourself. And literally, that's not from a Disney movie. It's true. You've got to believe in yourself. Otherwise, how can you achieve something?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's wonderful, wonderfully put, both of you. And when you're interviewing a patient, you, especially when you're with them in person, it's a bit disconnected on Zoom, but of course, it's one of the main ways we connect now. So I'm getting more used to it. But the important thing is that there's always a moment or a few moments where you feel something, you know, that moment is charged in some way. It's important. And that is very often the anchor that you drop for analyzing, you know, the case. And actually, Jeremy Sher calls it the pre-analysis, where you say, right, and Gorang says, like, now we're going to sketch the portrait of disease. Like, that first process is the most important one, aside from taking the case well, right? And if you don't do it, your brain can analyze a case and make a case for any remedy. That's what happens. And that's why you go around in circles. But if you drop an anchor, then the remedy has to match your anchor. And then it's a pattern matching job, rather than let's shoehorn something in, and we can shoehorn anything in. And, you know, we've all done it.
I call it my goosebump moments. My listeners know that in every case, here and there, I do get goosebumps, and I feel that there, here is the patient, here is the energy of the case. I write it in brackets, here I experience goosebumps. So this is something I have to delve deep into. Something is happening here. The case is moving.
It's interesting. I know it's just slightly off topic, but we are coming back, ladies and gentlemen. But just to carry this thread slightly on, and because you mentioned as a musician as well, and we know that Colin Griffiths has been on as well, and he's done a masterclass for us at Homeopathy in Practice on the architecture of healing, and he was also used to compose classical music. And just to digress from that tangent, you know, a lot of scientific research is now saying Mozart and Beethoven and so forth, you know, those harmonies, those symphonies actually are very healing for the soul now, you know, for the mind and help the nervous system. But anyway, but it's interesting, isn't it? When you have a consult and you have moments of silence with the patient, it's almost like a symphony in itself, because all of a sudden you hit the right note and everything opens up. And it can be very emotional. Sometimes it can be very draining. Sometimes it can leave you with that feeling that you cannot sleep at night as practitioners, you know, because we're worried about something they've said or how they're feeling. But it's such a beautiful process, isn't it? That in itself is everything you could possibly want. And when we talk repertory and materia medica, those just come in as friends saying, hey, here we are. Now, why don't you open our pages up and let's see where we get to. We're here to help you, right?
Very much so.
Brilliant. Let's go into our forefathers
the
again.
Story of repertory. Yeah, we're still at the grandfather Boninghausen, and he's furnished us with a lot of tools that are incredibly relevant and useful. And clams is where we got to in the first session, and so the description is something that was added recently to do with the level of experience, and often links to something directly in nature. The concomitant is like, okay, well, the sensation is the chief melody, to use a musical analogy. It sings the tune of what's actually happening in the case. And the concomitant is the accompaniment, essentially, the harmony singer that goes along with that. And it's a very important symptom, because a concomitant can't be explained by the pathology, you know. So if someone's got a urinary tract infection, you ask them questions that are about them, their experience of it, rather than the common symptoms that come with that pathology. And those will very often find you a much better remedy. If you just put in the common symptoms, you'll come up with cantharis every time. And it's very often not cantharis for that problem, although it can help in a low potency in a lot of cases for a time, but it won't solve the problem unless the person really genuinely does need that remedy at a more individual level. Then you've got the location, which is an easy one. That's the part. So that's like the noun, to use the language analogy, you know, where it is. The etiology is very important, and this is highlighted very strongly in German New Medicine, and is super important, especially when people can't really describe their sensation very well, because then they're not so embodied for whatever reason. Probably it's trauma, and that is what the etiology is telling you. What were the deepest traumas the person's had, and how did the problems really surface? What was going on in their life when it surfaced? And the modality is where the polarization occurs. And basically the way homeostasis works is that if you're experiencing one pole, chill, you have to experience the other pole, heat, in order to come back to the middle. And that is the true paradigm of healing. So the modalities are like gold for homeopaths. And Boninghausen's given us all this, as well as a repertory, as well as this, which is like a kind of slate you can put on your desk, which is everything you need to know about your patient to work with the Boninghausen way. So who are they? What's their personality, their disposition, their temperament, their constitution? This is what Hahnemann says is like the most important thing, especially in chronic disease. And what is going on? What is the process of their disease? Is it catarrhal, means that mucus is being produced, ulcerative, neurological, inflammatory? So this is when you're sketching your portrait of disease, you're saying, you want to work through all of these things if you can, or you choose the one which is the strongest anchor. It might be that the person's had a lot of suppression, a lot of allopathic medication potentially. And so what you'll find in those cases is that it's a case of organ pathology. And so the information might be stuck at this level, which is fine. We can use organopathy. Then we've talked about concomitants, we've talked about etiology, we've talked about the how, which is like the aggravation and amelioration, and we've talked about the time of appearance as well, like is there a periodicity? Very often, like in cases for women, the menstrual cycle gives you this periodicity and is very important in the arc of the symptoms and when they ebb and flow.
If you want to learn more, there is a blog at radaropus.com/blog on Boger Boninghausen repertory and how to do that and how to crack the clams and what does these questions, what are all the Q questions mean. You can go there and read it. I will link it in the comments.
Absolutely. It's very refreshing, the way that you've just explained the seven questions from the Boninghausen declams approach, because within that framework, as you were talking, comes the whole toolbox for a homeopath. You've got complex remedies, you've got mixes, including the German popular mixes, which are very low D potencies, no pun intended, because we're talking D clams, but you've got those, then you've got German new medicine, then you've got, you know, you've got the classical element there as well, and the similim. It's really, really interesting how that has come across actually as a conversation, because it's very robust and very complete. And ladies and gentlemen, budding homeopaths, seasoned homeopaths, the thing here is it just shows you that you have different paintbrushes as an artist, and they can comprise of a variety of things, and use certain things will come in handy for certain conditions. I'll give you my personal example. As studying German new medicine, certainly, or practicing German new medicine more recently, let's say, for me, it's not every single case, but there are some cases which are stark GNM. You know the causa causalis, and you go that route and it works. Some are very presenting pathology, like Hahnemann said, treat the patient for what he's come for, he or she, and some of the German mixes come into place. For others, it's a classical single remedy with some supportive tissue salts, maybe, you know. So it really depends. Anyway, the world is your oyster. No calc carb.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So what Boninghausen did was to decouple the location and the sensation and the modality and everything else from each other. And the reason he did that is, one, because a stitching pain felt in the eyes belongs to the whole person, not just the eyes. And then also that he basically was working with provings, and he said, every proving is incomplete data because you're sampling a section of the public. Might be 5, might be 10, might be 30 people, but it's never going to be everybody, right? So when a proving happens, the remedy interacts with your constitution and your type, and everyone has susceptibilities, weak points, right? So the proving for me will bring out my weak point. For Nyla, it'll bring out hers. For Atik, it'll bring out his. So there was basically, he said, if you just carried on that proving for everybody, eventually you'd get symptoms everywhere. And you'd see that the real characteristic of the proving was one of them might be stitching pain, or like burning pain with restlessness would be like one of the arsenicum, part of the arsenicum keynotes. So you'd see those threads that run through the whole thing. And, you know, in certain cases like Crataegus, it's a heart affinity that's one of the strongest threads for that remedy. So, you know, some remedies are very well known for their affinities. Some are very well known for their sensations. And, you know, basically that tells you about the personality of the remedies. But this makes sense of this process where you can chop up the different parts of the symptom and put them back together again. And then he produced eventually in 1846 his masterpiece, Therapeutic Pocketbook, Hahnemann said it's excellent and eminently desirable. And it's such a simple book to use compared to the modern repertories, only 7 chapters. And the beautiful thing about it is that the modalities are all in one section, which is the thing that Kent disliked about it. He really wanted modalities together with the locations. So we don't have to agree with everyone on everything. For me, having all of the modalities in one place is a very sensible move, because there's such important symptoms highlighting this doctrine of polarity, and that's how healing happens, is that, as I said earlier. So I have to say Burninghausen gets it right on that front.
Amazing.
Brilliant. Because we will also come to your new repertory that I use all the time now with my cases, which is actually the essence of what you have studied in from these grandfathers and fathers of homeopathy, and brought for the homeopaths of modern world.
Yeah, I think essentially, you know, there were people who objected, like Herring, Farrington, Kent, people, you know, rightfully said, if you take a local specific modality and pull it away and treat it as a general, that's a distortion. But they weren't able to use the therapeutic pocketbook on a computer, right? So with the pocketbook, you can reassemble the full symptom using clams, the location, modality, sensation, would be a typical trio. And then you see the remedies that are in all three. And you can, you know, as Boninghausen said, you could extrapolate that if the right person had been in that proving, they would have brought out that particular anyway. And you're going to go and look in the Materia Medica as your, you know, court of final appeal anyway. That's going to be where you really match the pattern of the patient and the remedy. So that, you know, as we always say, and we're taught by Janet Snowden, you ask a question to the repertory, you don't expect it to answer. It shows you the territory that you're in. And that's what this approach does very well. It puts you in the territory. So Boninghausen only ever generalized repertory, never Materia Medica. His characteristics are a very faithful record. And that's where the final authority lies. Cyrus Maxwell Boger resuscitated Boninghausen around the same time that Kent's repertory became the standard. And he sort of brought it up into contemporary practice. And this BBCR repertory is used throughout India to great effect because it makes it easy to find concomitants. I think that is the main USP of this repertory, and you could see it as a bridge between Kent and Boninghausen. The structure is more Kentian, but the ethos is more Boninghausen. And this is a brilliant repertory, especially when it's defined by pathology and physicals and not mentals. And that's perhaps why it's used in these quick prescribing scenarios. You need to find an answer quick, and you're not going to ask about dreams and childhood and take 90 minutes to understand all of those characteristics.
The remote clinics where pathology is taking over everything, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Go on.
No, there is a note again, because I'm just, Luke, you know this probably, but the 65, out of the 65K unique listeners every week, there are thousands of students as well from all over the world. But the question that may arise in their mind is, well, okay, but this is Boninghausen's approach, and then we've got the Kentian approach. We're talking about quick prescribing or possibly acute prescribing, where you just need to give something to help the patient at that moment in time. It doesn't nullify the need for a follow-up prescription, which does take into account things that have not been asked, like dreams and where did this start and the history, etc. So it's very important for students to know this, that they go hand in hand. It's not two separate systems as such. They can flow very beautifully into another.
Yeah, Yeah, Compton Burnett talked about the ladder, and you know that first acute appointment is the first rung of the ladder, your journey together with the patient, and you take that snapshot of what the suffering is like at that moment, and the remedy matches that snapshot, not the entire case, right? It's like you know, if the building's burning, you get a fire extinguisher and you put it out before you go in and ask all of the, you take the 90-minute consultation. But if the remedy's effective, then the person's going to come back and say, you know, let's look at the chronic picture now. And that's an established practice. Like Roberts talks about it in his Art and Cure, Art and Science of Homeopathy, the Art and Direction of Cure, I think it's called. The perfect time to take the case is after an acute, because an acute is very often a flare-up of the chronic state. And after the acute replaces the chronic suffering. It comes in and it's like superimposed upon it. Your chronic picture goes away, the acute comes up, you deal with it, and then the chronic picture comes back. And all the things that you forgot about it and weren't able to talk about become apparent again. So it's the perfect time to go and have a full consultation then. So then Boge's synoptic key, which is something I picked up on, and I suppose I sort of thought, I was looking at it and I liked the way it was arranged, lots of chapters, very specific chapters. And at the start of each one, it gives you the like just the broad, you know, general symptom of that chapter. So if it's the back chapter, it gives you the remedies that are most indicated for back problems. That's the first rubric. And I'm like, well, that's perfect. That's, you know, if I've got a case that's has back symptoms, I can just put in back. Do you know what I mean?
And the
And
remedy
not,
has to be there.
and the remedy has to be there exactly. Rather than getting fussy about all of the smaller intricate symptoms, which if they're there and the person describes them very beautifully, then of course we can take a different road. But oftentimes they don't do that, and it might be a very a sort of diffuse statement about back pain. Then we can go back lumbar, back thoracic, back cervical, but we can keep it, you know, loosely defining the territory. And I think that that is one of the answers for dealing with the problem of repertory.
Absolutely. I can also see that you've mentioned Fatak here as well. Like, for example, if we know this is the symptom that needs treating, we can also go in with one rubric from Fatak and see, okay, this is my broad repertorization, and then I put in one rubric from Fatak and see which remedy is covering it. This is like the artistically using the software where you can confirm the remedies through various masters.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Fatak basically adapted Boge's approach, reducing things down to the minimum possible by watchful selection, which means that the remedies that are in there, he knew they worked from his own practice. So they're very reliable. There's no noise in that repertory at all. And you know, Pierre Schmidt, one of the main people who worked with Kent's repertory and brought homeopathy to a great number of practitioners, you know, he also raises the point that when you use huge rubrics, all you get is polycrest. Now that would be the case for him because he was using a book. When you're using software, that's not the case because you can filter the analysis and look at the small remedies very easily. And actually then using the large rubrics helps to surface the small remedies more than any other technique. Yeah.
Great.
So I wanted to find out more about Kent's repertory. And Claude helped me with some of the research here. And I didn't know this, but it's derived from Lippi, Lippi's keynotes, and Lippi's work. And one of the things about Kent that's different, to say Boger, Borick, and other contemporaries of his was that he chose to stay anchored in provings, which is very Hahnemannian, and you know also what Boninghausen did. And it is the most influential repertory ever made. And he was influenced by a mystic. Swedenborg was a scientist for the first 56 years of his life. Then he had a sort of spiritual awakening and, and has this understanding of how the higher aspects of the human, what they are. And Kent adopted that for the structure of his repertory.
Mm.
And he was an eclectic physician, and apparently hostile to homeopathy until his wife fell ill and all the treatments failed until a homeopath was called and who cured her.
Mm.
Then he converted, never looked back. And by 1883, he was, you know, the most famous homeopath in America. And his teaching of Materia Medica is, you know,
What do wives have to do to make a person a homeopath? Oh my God!
just nearly die. That's all.
Yeah, just nearly die, and then
things I have
make,
to do.
Make your husband a genius.
Yeah. So he adapted Lippi's repertory and handbook of characteristics, apparently, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and he also looked at Jarre's repertory, which was he saw was good but outdated because there were more provings. Herring and Kent himself were doing a lot of provings in America, and he found the therapeutic pocketbook just didn't work for him, you know, which is fine. And he used Allen's Encyclopedia, Bigler's Diary, and Minton's Diseases of Women, some of his sources. Okay.
I mean, that's genius, right? I mean, seriously, you know, this gentleman who would teach in dim-lit rooms with students, you know, and they were dusty roofs, and the genius of the mind. I mean, can you imagine the amount of hours? I mean, it's impossible even to just fathom, isn't it? Spent on the work that he did.
Absolutely. It really is. And the way that they went through it over and over again, sort of iterating through it as though you're like bug testing software. It's a technology. That book, you know, is the first technology.
Written technology. I'm just thinking if something doesn't work for me, that's a time of invention. And before we go any further, Luke, I think we will need another two-parter to complete this. I would like to touch upon a very important thing here. As we are talking about the evolution and we are thinking about the past, we are also in a time, in an era where things are changing quickly and very, very rapidly. What do you think is the most important thing a homeopath needs to root into? When they are using a repertory, or when they are using a software, or an online software, or a complete, there are so many softwares out there. What is the most important thing that they need to focus on to?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the foundations are really important, and understanding what the first technologies were. You know, they were Materia Medicas and then repertories in book form that you had to read and, you know, and leaf through and understand the philosophy of the homeopath who created it and what kind of problems they were trying to solve with it, and to like immerse yourself in the details that are there, so that when you're using a search tool, whether that's keyword search or semantic search, when the results come back, you need to be able to pass judgment on them, not just accept them for what they are based on the algorithm of the software. Now, if you've never spent time with those books, reading them, how are you going to know which are the right rubrics? I think often people are searching for something that's like highly specific and resonant with exactly what their patient said. Now that ladies and gentlemen, to quote Atiq, is not what repertories really are trying to do, unless it's a Puritan repertory. That's what approving is, right? If you want to do that real close match, you want to search in approving, actually, because a repertory is like fragmented language, and it has to generalize to an extent, right? And if you look at the mind symptoms in Kent's repertory, very often they're nouns, they're descriptions of a state that someone inhabits. So industrious, eccentricity, haughty. They're very static. And so that leaves room for, a bit of there's like a boundary, and the boundary is kind of a bit fuzzy. People can be industrious in many different ways, and that shading you find in the sub rubrics. But I think that there are lots of things to say, but one is that you need to know the provenance of the rubrics, right? So the ones that people struggle with nowadays because they're in antiquated language, those are actually the main rubrics that should home all the remedies. And we can add synonyms to them to make them easier to find, but it's good to keep the wording as it was for that, understanding that provenance. And you could take someone might add a very like specific small rubric that's similar to industrious but closer to what your patient actually says. Now, if you take that, you'll take a tiny slice of the materia medica, you'll miss out all of the polycrests, and that is going to throw up it could throw up the best remedy ever, but the statistical chance of it doing so is very small. And it's actually better to, take a bigger rubric, take a slice of a pie that contains both the classical polycrest and the contemporary remedies, and give you that opportunity to comb through and find the best fit using your the anchor that you've dropped as a nucleus that helps you to do that pattern match, not to just shoehorn in something that the mind can find a pattern anywhere, but.
It's also interesting for to note that many jokers joking. Well, one joke is that generally when we look at the repertory, it's very much like Yoda language. It's all in reverse. But there is a structure to it, actually. There is a structure, as in how the mind should be trained. When you look at individuals, generals, and then you have the ailments or ailments from, and there is structure. And even though it's very, very difficult, the more that we use the repertory, the easier it becomes, because the brain gets trained. It changes the way that we think, and actually, it's a very professional way to think. Not to speak, but to think.
I really love the rubric additions that have been done, like the references, different referential rubrics under one rubric. Like, for example, there is one I'm looking at here, mind depersonalization, with just one rubric. But there is, in Adonis, added confusion of mind, identity as to his is depersonalization. Like, in a glance, you can see, okay, this could be the meaning. And then there are rubrics that are referred under it: confusion of a mind, identity as to his, boundaries and personal, body out of the body, separated. Like, you can very quickly in Adonis see, okay, I'm thinking this rubric, but this might be a better matching one. And you can quickly click it and jump to the rubric. And also, if you are just at the end of differentiating, you can quickly see, okay, which remedies are here, and if there is anything that is catching my eye, or if there is anything that is that I need to read about. This is very th these are very, very important tools that we can only experience if we scroll through the original work, just like paper by paper going through the Kent repertory.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling. cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And yeah, and to understand what Kent did with the structure, that is his great gift to homeopathy, because he states Kent was super against using pathology. He said, you know, that's not the true art. So you can call them like connectors or nodes in the repertory, are like the headers. And so the header describes a phenomena. What is happening for that patient? Oh, they've got confusion of mind. Okay. Mm. Now, within confusion of mind, there's lots of different avenues that you can walk down that are all in that same neighborhood. And that's the way to think about it. Like you said, the confusion of mind is about identity. Within that, there'll be a specific one about sexual identity as well. So you need to boil things down to the basic phenomena that's being described. Is it absent-minded? Is it awkwardness? Is it confusion of mind? Is it haughty, right? And, you know, very often within that connector, you'll have a binary. Is it a yes or a no, right? A desire or an aversion. If it's, if you go to General's Heat, you have the one rubric that makes, that trips everyone up when they're a student. If someone's chilly, you have to go to the rubric heat, lack of vital, right? Which actually makes sense, because in terms of structuring, you don't want to have chilly and hot. You just want to have one connector and then show the polarities and the different, you know, modifications of it in one place. And that's his genius. Which is what we need to learn and remember.
Genius it is, seriously.
Yeah. Absolutely. We are nearly at the end of... Oh my God, Nyla, time has just flown, hasn't it? What's going on?
These are amazing two-part episode. I think there's a wealth of knowledge out there for the students, for the homeopaths, and even if we want to connect to our past, because we do need to stay rooted when we are thinking, studying, or everything. How... Doctrine of signatures, doctrine of homeopathy, doctrine of repertory. Where did it start? How did it start? Why did it start?
Why did it start? Yeah.
Why are we here?
Why?
But before we go, we have started this rapid fire at the end of our episode. So it's like, how quickly can you answer this question? Okay.
But just before the rapid fire, one thing which we both want to ask you, as somebody who is talented with the technology that surrounds us at this present moment in time, which is July 2026, ladies and gentlemen. But the question is, AI, I know it's going to be asked. Actually, let's not spoil it. Go on. I'm not going to ask that question.
We'll start from there. AI, threat or opportunity?
Opportunity.
A little bit more to that.
Just a little bit.
Even though it's rapid fire, but we are starting with this because I think it wants to go.
Yeah, no, okay. No, obviously, with everything, there's a binary to it. And if we embrace something purely for the sake of it being exciting and powerful technology, then there's always going to be a threat, and there's a lot of different ways that AI can threaten, homeopathy, any profession, and also anyone's like critical thinking faculties. If you rely on it too heavily, you'll always lose something. You'll always gain something as well, because if it takes off grunt work away from you, it frees you up to explore something else and be creative in another way. So that's part of it. There's also, there's a danger that's to do with data sovereignty and the sovereignty of the homeopath. If you hand away too much of the process, is it really even your prescription anymore? But the opportunity for me is that it is very good at helping build technology. It's exceptionally good at that. And so to be a homeopath who understands the architecture of healing, to quote Colin Griffith there, to be able to take that and write your own software with AI helping you, that means in homeopathy we can create tools that much better serve homeopaths, because the frame of mind you're in as a homeopath is very, very specific, and programmers do not understand it, let me tell you, because you're not in a like logical click flow like you would be when you're working in Excel or something like that. You're trying to balance your attention on the patient. You want to search, you want to make a quick search query. You want the tool to be very intuitive, but also bring back very deep data. You're in a very kind of like flow state that I don't think programmers understand, but homeopaths do, and AI can help homeopaths develop programs now. So
I cannot agree more, because it's exciting, it's exciting. Even the HPP that we did a webinar on, it's very exciting in the beginning, but later on you feel like, oh, that's very machine language, and it starts doing the process that you really liked, and it doesn't matter how you converse with it will make you happy all the time. So we as homeopaths need to know, what is the work that we want to give over, and what is something that we want to keep to ourselves?
Correct. Because
people are coming to us for that human understanding. How are you? If a patient walks into my clinic, my doors, I might perceive them completely differently than if they walked into your doors, Luke. But they walked into mine. There is a reason they walked into my doors and not your doors. So I have to be there for them and perceive them as they present themselves. And then I can use those tools to maybe put them rightly, make notes for me, or summarize it, etc. But I am the homeopath. I have to do my job properly, using all what is there for at my disposal. This is where a threat can become opportunity, or an opportunity can become a threat.
There's always going to be both with every question. Every single question will have the same answer.
Next question.
Favorite chapter in Kent.
Well, it has to be the mind chapter.
Love the mind chapter. Love the delusions.
And also because, the mind chapter was very, very scanty before Kent's repertory. And the fact that he was, that he was thinking about the higher aspects of consciousness, and that's important in terms of finding a cure, helping people heal. It's not just, the body is, the body and the mind, actually, they're not separate at all, are they? So to separate them is basically what we do to help us analyze a case, but really they're not separate at all. That's what Massimo taught us when he came over.
And just to end, Bruce Lee has been quoted to say, be fluid like water. So as homeopaths, let's be fluid and let's not become too rigid, and let it flow. Sounded like something from What is it? Frozen, isn't it? Let it flow, let it go.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, that's the end of this episode.
I was thinking you are talking aquatic animals language.
Yes. What is? Well, I am a Pisces. There you go. That's a revelation, ladies and gentlemen.
Let it flow.
Let it flow. See you all next
Thank
week.
You. Thank
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.